Listen. Hello? We go out, we hit people in the mouth.
You play to win the game.
Next fan up.
I want winners.
Featuring Pod Vader and the Superfans.
But they are who we thought they were.
Hello and welcome to the longer than intended edition of the Wednesday interview Next Fan Up podcast. I'm Pod Vader. Yes, I spent a lot of time talking with Arthur Arkish of Pro Football Weekly this week about a whole bunch of great topics involving the NFL, the movement in the NFL, the lower ratings in the NFL, the commissioner's job status, trade deadline, a whole bunch of great stuff. So hopefully you're really going to enjoy that interview. I certainly enjoyed it. We got into a whole bunch of stuff. We're talking about the lack of an apparent MVP candidate this year. Although I think Arthur mentioned a guy in there that I might be willing to consider a non-quarterback MVP too. So you're going to want to listen to that particular interview. And then I talk with Ryan, our Jaguars super fan, not so much about the Thursday night game coming up, but talk to him a little bit more about the state of the Jaguars and the performing lower than expectations at the beginning of the season. Although Ryan seemed to been pumping the brakes this summer, and we just seem to ignore it. And the reason why I only speak with Ryan is because we don't currently have a Tennessee Titans super fan. So if you're listening to this right now and you are a Titans fan, I want you to be on my podcast. So email us nextfanup@gmail.com. You can also tweet us at NFU Podcast. That works great too. You know, we'll get you in on this show if you're a Tennessee Titans fan. But right now, let's talk with Pro Football Weekly's Arthur Arkish. All right, ladies and gentlemen, it's the weekly Blog Talk Radio Fantasy Expert League update. And unfortunately, John Sally of Pro Football Weekly is unable to join us as he's off, you know, raising a child, as he just had a baby. Well, he didn't have a baby. His wife had the baby. But he's helping her and it's everything is healthy and everything is good. So I brought in a pinch hitter also from Pro Football Weekly. It's Arthur Arkish. Hello, Arthur. Welcome back to Next Fan Up.
Thank you, Jay. How are you doing this morning?
I'm doing all right. In the fantasy league, I still got a slight hold on our last playoff spot. Maybe a little early to be talking playoffs, but not really. We're past the halfway in fantasy, and John managed to tie me. Now, John is also unfortunately the cellar dweller in our league. And I went to congratulate him on a win going into Monday night, and said, oh, Lamar Miller will score more than 6 points. But Lamar Miller went out and scored exactly 6 points and came away with a tie. You know, thank you, Chris Hogan, for fumbling on your first catch of the game, which put you in the doghouse and got you 0 points in fantasy for me. But yeah, that seems to be the story of my fantasy season so far. You play fantasy?
Yeah, I love it. I'm not having a ton of success myself. one league that's going pretty well, at least it's the Pro Football Weekly League, so a bit of bragging rights there. But it was a rough week otherwise across the board. I was going to say, though, Jay, good news for you, and I can speak from experience, John with his newborn at home, and we do want to congratulate John on his little one. Things are about to start slipping through the cracks left and right when it comes to fantasy, so you should be able to gain an edge at this point for sure.
That's a good point. That is a very good point. That's a very good point. The other mistake I made this week is I benched Matt Forte for Giovanni Bernard.
So did I. Not for Gio, but I had Forte on the bench too, and it was miserable.
Well, I mean, I was worried about his injuries. He hadn't performed. He was questionable all up until the game, and I was like, you know what? Gio's got a great matchup against Cleveland. This just makes sense. And of course, it doesn't make sense this year.
Your decision at least made more sense than mine. I benched Forte for Chris Ivory about 2 minutes before kickoff. Just don't ask me why. I mean, well, you know, because Forte hasn't looked good, obviously. But beyond that, gosh, the Jaguars are just a disaster, about as big a one as the Jets. So obviously I was regretting that decision. Fortunately, it wasn't going to make a difference because I just got blown out in that league across the board. I had LeSean McCoy and I think Tyler Lockett, I'm still holding on hope to, and just injuries have reared their ugly heads. So I know I'm preaching to the choir when it comes to that.
You know, coming up a little bit later, we're going to be talking with Ryan, our Jaguars super fan, as we preview the Thursday night game. Although we're not really going to preview the Thursday night game as much as we're going to talk about how bad the Jaguars really are, despite the expectations going into this year, and try and figure out what's going on there. You heard any rumblings about Gus Bradley and maybe job security there?
I haven't heard anything specifically, but I would be stunned if he was able to survive this without a dramatic turnaround and fast. I mean, he's already in rarefied air in terms of just the miserable start he's off to there. And obviously, like you said, now he's got the expectations to match. Shad Khan's checkbook opened up and just not good. I'm just running a Pro Football Reference 14-40 through his first 54 games. So that is, you know, I think that speaks for itself. And I'll tell you what, actually, if they stumble Thursday night, that allows the Jaguars the mini bye if they were going to think about a change. If you go into Tennessee and lose and fall to 2-5, I don't think it would be shocking at all if we saw our first head coach firing come tomorrow night. It wouldn't stun me anyway.
Holy mackerel. That would be, wow. That would, I don't know. You know, it's funny how things change. We had talked about some of the topics we're going to address, but now that you got me going down this road, you know, the last London game is happening this week. And, you know, we've had a lot of movement in the league, and we're going to get to the Raiders in a moment. But, you know, there haven't been a lot of rumblings about Jacksonville moving recently. Is that something that's definitely been laid to rest now?
I don't know that it's been – well, yeah, I mean, I think – I don't know that it's been laid to rest, but I do think that as much as anything, any team moving to London, those rumblings have kind of quieted again because there's just so many logistical – hoops to jump through. And I think even perhaps Roger Goodell, someone who's so, you know, his focus is so singular and that's about making the most money possible. Maybe he's even seeing that there are just too many obstacles in a move like that. And then you got all these other, you know, teams, obviously, whether it was the Rams last year. And like you said, we'll talk about the Raiders. You've got the Chargers and a lot of movement elsewhere. And maybe more realistic options with stadium plans kind of materializing that it's sort of put anything for the Jaguars on the back burner, I think.
So let's jump right to the Raiders situation. They've got approval now in Vegas to build a stadium. Mark Davis seems to be all gung-ho about moving the Raiders now from Oakland to Las Vegas. We've had movement this past year with the LA Rams of St. Louis. Now we have the Oakland Raiders of Las Vegas, perhaps, or is it going to be the Oakland Raiders of Los Angeles? What are you hearing with the Raiders' potential move?
Yeah, while I don't think it's a fait accompli yet, obviously he has to. There are a bunch of you know, hurdles to clear for Mark Davis and the Raiders. The biggest one, certainly, they do have taken care of now, and that's getting a huge amount of public funding from a tourist tax in Las Vegas to build that stadium. That's what teams are struggling to do these days, is get the public to pony up and pay for it. And now it sounds like the Raiders have at least a big portion of that. Now, Mark Davis still has some money to raise on his own. He has pledged, I believe, $500 million to the cause, and that's going to include taking out a big loan from the NFL. He's also going to have to find a way to raise a bunch of money for a relocation fee. The Rams just had to pay a huge chunk. I think it was like $800 million to move last year. That's money that Davis is going to have to raise. So there's a financial aspect of it. And then obviously he's going to have to get a majority ownership approval. He's going to need 23 votes in addition to his. There are rumblings that he does have some big fish on his side, and Robert Kraft and Jerry Jones. Those are, you know, real movers and shakers, obviously. And they have an interesting tie to the whole Vegas scene and gambling, in that they do, I believe, both have some ownership in these daily sites. I don't know whether it's FanDuel or DraftKings, but that I think is certainly allowing them to maybe turn the other, you know, to not have a problem with the gambling side of it that the NFL has for so long. And that was the thing people wondered about, obviously, in the move to Las Vegas. And certainly there are still going to be a lot of other owners that have to have their voices heard. But it does seem like this is there's a lot of things in place that is going to allow this to be a possibility.
You know, there are so many things about the story that intertwine with other stories. We look at, you know, the television ratings are down this year by 10%. And we have a team that's, you know, in a much larger television market, looking to move to a much smaller television market. And it would be one of the bottom five television markets if the move occurred. We have Election Day coming up. And the people of San Diego, not only are they going to go out and vote hashtag none of the above, but they're also going to go and put in their vote on a potential stadium deal to keep the Chargers in San Diego. The assumption being if the Chargers don't get that stadium, they'll move to Los Angeles, which would then allow the Raiders to make a move somewhere other than Los Angeles. But if the Chargers do get their stadium, the Raiders are next up for a Los Angeles deal, and all of that just becomes all sorts of fun.
Yeah, it sounds like it's just going to get a little bit more muddled before it gets even clearer. But what I can tell you on the Chargers front is that it remains a long shot that they're going to get the necessary votes for Proposition C for that downtown stadium in San Diego. But what we're hearing is that the owner there, Dean Spanos, is not he doesn't want to be a tenant with Stan Kroenke in Los Angeles. That's not, you know, the whole way that situation went down, has him still not feeling great about it. And, you know, there was an absolute power struggle there that obviously he lost, but, there were a lot of corners cut. Some people believe in the way that the Rams got to Los Angeles and, not a great deal, at least in some people's eyes. So, unlike Stan Kroenke, who, even though the St. Louis did everything they could to keep him and had loyal fans, and he jetted for Los Angeles, we're hearing that Spanos does not want to do that to the fans of the Chargers, and there still is a possibility of building a new site where dilapidated Qualcomm is right now in Mission Valley. And while Spanos is definitely preferable to go downtown and hopes that this stadium vote passes on November 8th, we hear that before he's going to hurry to go to Los Angeles, he may try and reopen the door to get to remain in Mission Valley with a new stadium there, a plan of which is already in place, and to not rule that out, because while you see Mark Davis can't wait to get out of Oakland, and as I said, Stan Kroenke couldn't wait to get out of St. Louis, boy, what a novel idea, an owner who actually wants to reward his fans and stay where he is.
What a novel idea. Do you think, you know, I don't want to say that the movement might be something to point to in this decline in ratings. You guys have a great piece up on ProFootballWeekly.com about Goodell and the ratings decline here. You know, lots of different things to look at in terms of this. But, I mean, movement certainly has to be part of this.
Yeah, I think so. And I appreciate you mentioning that Hub Arkish did write our Way We See a piece this week, his column exploring a lot of different issues that are playing into the ratings decline, at least from his vantage point, our vantage point. And movement is one of them. I just think it's just another way that the fans are getting turned off. Like we just talked about, you know, there were plans in place to try and keep these teams loyal fan bases. And it's just another sign that the bottom line is all that really matters here. And, you know, when you couple that with the you know, disintegrating product on the field because of both the officiating and injuries and, you know, there's a multitude of reasons. Even some of the matchups that they've had in primetime that have been seeing decreasing viewership have not been good at all. But, you know, when you explore that with a lot of different other, you know, options like domestic violence that continues to be completely not handled the right way, most recently with Josh Brown, obviously. It just seems like the NFL has its priorities in all the wrong places, whether it's this silly taunting stuff that suddenly Roger Goodell decides he's going to self-police and, you know, the anthem protests. We don't think that has as big of a part of it as some other areas, but it's a lot of little things that the NFL is not necessarily used to dealing with, and it doesn't seem like they've been handling them, you know, in exactly the most efficient or optimal way thus far.
We've heard a lot of rumblings from fans and from not necessarily, I don't know how to term, I don't know if I'd call you guys insiders or outsiders, but we're hearing a lot of rumblings from a lot of people pointing the finger at Roger Goodell, saying that this is not a man who should be in his position at this point for much longer. But are there any sort of those rumblings on the inside? Are the owners seem to be happy with the job that Goodell is doing?
You know, yes and no. It's so tough because I think that a lot of the owners are embarrassed with, you know, various handlings. Again, you could get back to domestic violence or other things that Roger Goodell has kind of dropped the ball on. But then at the same time, they're still turning record profits, and Goodell is most responsible for that because he's the guy who brokered these huge TV deals, and he's the guy who runs the league. So as they enjoy their, you know, greatest stretch of prosperity in the history of the game, and he's working directly for the owners, and all those profits are going directly into his and the owner's pockets. I think it gets back to what are the priorities, and these are still businessmen that are trying to turn as big of a profit as possible. So I think maybe they're willing to ignore some of the PR black eyes that continue to pop up. And boy, I mean, do they seem to happen every week at this point with the way things are being fumbled? You know, it's all about the Benjamins, if you will, for lack of a better cliche term there. And I think that's why the NFL owners are kind of it's sort of willful ignorance or turning the other eye to a lot of other things.
Yeah, to me as a fan, limiting the Sunday ticket to, you know, one outlet seems to be detrimental to the league. But if they're getting, you know, giant amounts of dollars from doing that, by selling the rights to that one particular outlet, then I can see both sides of it. But at the same time, if your ratings are declining and you look at the matchups, I mean, this has been a strange year. We were talking, you know, we're coming up to the halfway point now on the season. And at this point, there's usually some candidates for the postseason awards that start to emerge. And at this point, I'm looking at the MVP of the league, and I don't know if I can find anybody that really fits that bill.
Yeah, it is bizarre. I'll tell you, I hadn't thought about it until you mentioned this morning, right before we came on the air. And it is strange to look at. I don't know if it's right now because there's not clear-cut Super Bowl favorites at this point, or if it's because the ones that are the usual suspects and teams like New England, of course, and Denver still, although I know they've suffered a couple tough losses, seems like they got back on track and still have that great defense. And you know, Seattle winning with defense right now. So you're not seeing these obvious quarterbacks. We all know it's a quarterback driven league, and those are the guys that are normally in the driver's seat for the MVP award. You know, Tom Brady misses four games. Certainly you're not, you know, Trevor Siemian has protected the football and managed games well, but he's not an MVP candidate. Russell Wilson has been hurt. So it is kind of strange. And then again, I think we're still waiting for some of those teams. The AFC right now just doesn't seem that great outside of those two clubs. So I don't know who else you're going to make a case for. The AFC South is pathetic. You know, the AFC North has fallen a little bit. Now Big Ben's hurt. It is kind of an odd year. And I think it's going to take a few more weeks to really kind of to wrap our head around it. But boy, I'll tell you what's going on in Dallas right now, like you just said, with Ezekiel Elliott has been incredible. It reminds us so much of what they did with DeMarco Murray 2 years ago. I'm one who's been saying, and I'm glad I've been saying it for a long time already, but Tony Romo's not getting that job back. I mean, Jerry Jones, all he wants to do is win. I mean, he signed Greg Hardy last year. That's obviously first and foremost. And as much as he loves Tony Romo, I can't see a scenario where he turns back to him until Dak slips, and he hasn't yet. So maybe Dak Prescott, you know, those two rookies are going to have a chance to be in the conversation for both awards, I suppose, if this thing continues. But again, we have to mention that there's a long way to go here. And I'm sure there are going to be some guys that kind of pop into the out of the periphery and kind of start to make more sense in that context.
Yeah, you know, it's been an interesting season. We talk about Brady being suspended for four games, but the team still got it done. So to me, it just makes a stronger argument for Belichick as coach of the year. Ezekiel Elliott leads all rushers as a rookie. You know, could the rookie of the year also be the MVP of the league? That'd be interesting. But then you'd say, well, of course he's going to lead the league in rushing. He's got the best offensive line in the league. And then you go to Atlanta. Atlanta leads the league in offense. Matt Ryan, one of the top quarterbacks right now in terms of QBR. But again, is he doing that because of the running game that they have there in Atlanta? And you look at Atlanta's record, they're 4-3. Is he really the MVP of the league? So then you move on to Minnesota getting it done with their defense. But I don't know if I've heard of any singular player on the Minnesota defense that's sort of getting the kudos that perhaps he deserves.
Yeah, and that might be in the case of the Vikings. That's kind of like if you talk about the Chicago Cubs and Anthony Rizzo and Chris Bryant maybe taking MVP votes away from each other, or, you know, Kyle Hendricks and John Lester helping split the Cy Young votes. It's kind of like they all could potentially be punished because the unit is just so absolutely dominant. I thought until last week, and obviously Bradford was terrible in his homecoming in Philadelphia, the numbers weren't gaudy, but everything he has dealt with, I thought he might be an interesting kind of dark horse candidate for the MVP. And again, that was when they were only 5-0. There's so much football left to be played. And you make a good point about Atlanta and Matt Ryan, but boy, they're starting to mirror the same tailspin they had last year when I believe they started 5-1, I think. Mm-hmm. Now they have a chance of dropping 3 straight with Green Bay coming to town Sunday. So, and as great as Ryan has been, you know, where is he without Julio Jones? So I think I'd be just as inclined possibly to consider Julio in that spot than Ryan. We talked about maybe Matt Stafford if the Lions keep winning. It's been incredible what he has done, how he's turned his career around with their offensive coordinator there. But outside of that, it's strange, you know. Andrew Luck is playing great, but the Colts are in the worst division in football and still looking up at the Texans and have a long way to go. So it's going to take a little while for this stuff to sort out, but it does kind of play back into your point. It's just, it's an odd year for the NFL, and it's not a wonder why ratings are down, in our opinion. I mean, you look at tomorrow night, this AFC South matchup. You look last week. I know certainly it's a great rivalry, but boy, that Bears-Packers game was tough to watch. Thursday night football in general, there might be something that they need to address. The product is so bad. These players don't have time to recover, and it all gets back to the point that Goodell can say he cares about player safety, but as long as you're having Thursday night football and as long as guys are drawing bigger fines for taunting penalties than they are for head-to-head shots, there's a stunning level of hypocrisy, and I think that the American public is too smart for it. I think they've picked up on it, and I think they're sick of it.
Get rid of Thursday night football. I'm all for it.
It's terrible. It's so bad. And you know, it was almost a phenomenon last week. I don't know if you had a chance to watch that NFC West game. I know it was either Sunday or Monday night, but what an interesting time on Twitter. Half of Twitter saying it was the worst NFL game of the year and the other half saying it was the best. So it kind of just gets, you know, just another point of how strange things are. I will say I was in the, when I say worst versus best, I was in the latter category. I thought it was wonderful. You don't get to see defense like that very often. The kickers at the end made it a bit of a punchline with the both missed kicks in overtime, and obviously the special teams was a joke, but man, I love watching defensive football like that. It reminded me of what Seattle and San Francisco used to do in the NFC West, so I did enjoy that, but it did end on a tie and on a bad note with those missed kicks.
I've kept you way longer than I intended, Arthur, but one last quick thing. We're heading to the trade deadline. Patriots made a couple of moves yesterday. They acquire Kyle Van Noy from the Lions. They trade away A.J. Derby, who was a preseason darling here in New England, to the Denver Broncos for draft choices. What are some of the trade rumors that you're hearing as November 1st quickly approaches?
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of the focus, and I know these are out there already, but they're just kind of the obvious ones, is certainly San Francisco looking at a fire sale, whether it's Joe Staley or Torrey Smith. Both of those names have been floated. I believe it was Pro Football Talk who had that report first. And then the Eagles have been the team that a lot of people are pairing potential wide receiver options with, try and get Carson Wentz some more help. He does not have a good skill group there. Again, Torrey Smith is one name. Alshon Jeffrey here in Chicago has been another, but that's going to be tough to do. He's obviously very much a rental on a franchise tag, and I don't think Philly wants to do that deal unless they get an agreement in place that they can, that they have the ability to tag him again just in case he were to get hurt or something like that. It may have made sense with guys like Jay Cutler and Tony Romo, but those contracts are so hard to move. And now with Brian Hoyer getting back, the Bears have to go back to Cutler. So I think it's going to be a lot of the smaller names more than likely, only because the contracts make it so difficult. Yesterday we saw Kyle Van Noy and the Patriots' latest reclamation project making a trade with the Lions for their former second round linebacker. And then you saw A.J. Derby, of course, going to Denver for a former for a future fifth-round pick. So New England is able to recoup whatever they gave off for the Van Noy deal. There's not a lot of obvious names at this point. I'm not expecting any huge ones. And, again, I think maybe like a Torrey Smith or an Alshon Jeffrey may end up being the biggest name that we see we see going. But perhaps Joe Thomas. Hugh Jackson said no way on Joe Thomas. I still don't think you can rule that out completely. Seattle needs offensive line help desperately. Carolina, maybe if they win Sunday, needs secondary help desperately, but you have to think their season is already a pretty lost cause. New Orleans looking for defensive help. So certainly teams will be making and fielding phone calls, but it's tough to do these in season. I think we've seen an uptick in the off season of bigger names, but I'm not sure you're going to see any big blockbusters over the next 48 hours.
Now, Philly's an interesting team to watch, considering the way that their season's gone so far, which I think was a little bit of a surprise to people, mortgaging that draft next year for players that will get it done. If they can finish, you know, with a winning record this year, they could be vindicated in mortgaging that draft.
Well, yeah, and you have to remember that they did so well to get some of that draft back, or obviously the first rounder by the fortuitous Sam Bradford deal that as of to date has worked out for both teams. So, yeah, it's been an interesting 12 months for Howie Roseman after he's taken control back there, getting rid of Chip Kelly, and he's kind of going all in. You know, he's got his quarterback, and now he wants to surround him, and I can't fault him at all for that. I think that's the smart move to make, and while Dak Prescott and Carson Wentz have been so, so impressive, both of them, it's clear how much less Wentz has to work with and what he's been able to overcome. So it will be interesting to see. And then I guess you just keep an eye on a couple of the other teams that were at least active in the offseason and, you know, have a kind of incentive to make moves, whether it's Miami now just got a couple big wins and has a seemingly growing star in Jay Ajayi. They need help all along their defense. Tennessee, too, made a couple big moves in the offseason. Maybe they could look for even more wide receiver help. So there are some interesting kind of hypothetical situations out there, but I haven't heard a ton of specifics, and we'll just have to wait and see what unfolds over the next, 72 hours or a little more than that at this point.
Arthur, where can people find you?
Head over to ProFootballWeekly.com. I'm also on Twitter, of course, at Arthur Arkish. And, yeah, we'd love it if you come check out PFW, doing all kinds of fun stuff over there. If you're up for another podcast, I'm doing a Locked On Bears podcast. You can find that over at Audio Boom, and all that information should be on Twitter. We certainly appreciate it and having a lot of fun. As weird as the NFL season has been, we're having a lot of fun covering it, and we hope people are enjoying it.
And the Pro Football Weekly and the Pro Football Weekly Fantasy podcasts on Blog Talk Radio as we continue the Blog Talk Radio Fantasy Expert League. I think John's probably pretty much out of it. Congrats on the baby, but unfortunately that's going to doom your fantasy season, and I will hold on desperately to my playoff spot. Somehow, some way, I will find a way to not make stupid moves like benching Matt Forte. Arthur, thanks so much for joining us on the Next Fan Up podcast.
Yep, pleasure's mine, Jay. Have a good day. Appreciate it.
So there goes Arthur. Great point there about Julio Jones. I think Julio Jones is perhaps the only obvious MVP candidate that I seem to have been overlooking. And that's probably because, again, you look at Atlanta's record, they're 4-3. So another good point is we're not quite at the halfway point. So we still have a lot of football to go. But it's certainly interesting. Usually at this point, we've got two or three strong candidates that we're really looking at. And I do think we could see Ezekiel Elliott stand out at the end of the season as being a strong rookie of the year and MVP candidate when all is said and done. So good on him. Good draft choice by Jerry Jones. Hey, speaking of those, we also briefly discussed a little bit of politics there because San Diego is going to the polls to vote on whether or not they're going to include some funding for a San Diego Chargers stadium. You can put a bet, if you'd like, a wager on the upcoming political election. We only got a couple more weeks for that. Now, while we endorse hashtag none of the above, we will, of course, take any money involving Donald Trump or Hillary Clinton. But we do not encourage you to vote for either of those two candidates. But if you want to place a wager on who you think will win, and I do think the odds are slightly tilted towards one side rather than the other, then you can do so at betdsi.com. Of course, if you don't want to wager on politics and want to wager on the NFL, you can do that as well as with a whole bunch of other sports. As we discussed last week, the surfing championship championships was something that was really part of Neil's attention. Go to betdsi.com, place your wagers, and when you do, your initial deposit, you'll get 100% bonus, plus using our promo code FANUP10, you're going to get an extra $10 to go on top of that. BetDSI.com for all of your betting needs. All right, here we go with the Thursday Night Football Superfan Battle. All right, so I'm joined now by our Jacksonville Jaguars superfan, Ryan. We are currently without a Tennessee Titans superfan, so if you want to join us, we've been saying it over and over and over again. Just send us an email, nextfanup@gmail.com. We're taking all comers. If you like the Tennessee Titans, we want you, and we want to hear from you and sort of provide your view on your team. So, Ryan, and this season hasn't really gone the way I think a lot of us expected the Jaguar season to go, or maybe it did. I don't know.
No, I would agree with you. It hasn't gone how any, I don't know, how most people expected, certainly me, at least with the team. They should have been improved at the very least, and really they just kind of look the same, and it is disappointing. So they got some buzz, they got the fans excited. This time I feel like legitimately, because we had more talent, on defense and some exciting players, and it's just gone terribly, and Bortles all of a sudden doesn't look any good. So that's all a bad combination, and with a win last week, we would have been at 500, and the Raiders would have been about 4-3, I think, and both teams might have looked even, and it just didn't work that way. Jags almost lost by 20. Raiders look like the promising young new team, and the Jags are just kind of stuck where they've always been.
What do you think has really been the main issue to your team? Because I don't think it's been injuries.
No. You know, we've got Luke Jokel, who switched from left tackle to left guard, who's out for the year, but you can't really say that's a reason for anything, and every team has injuries, and I don't think the Jags have really been hit by too many. So what it really is to me is the offense, and it's just disappointing because last year, you know, Bortles threw a lot of touchdowns, and a lot of people were saying, hey, he threw those in garbage time, and I didn't believe it just because I saw the games, and I don't know, it didn't really feel like he was a garbage time only quarterback, and all I can say is that anyone who had that opinion is just justified by watching this season because he hasn't really done anything when it mattered. And it's crazy because Allen Robinson is really good, and you saw that in the preseason. I hate to go back to then, but he hasn't had much of a season. But I'm not putting any blame on the receivers, really. This is really – I feel like it's now just on Bortles and the coaching staff. And the problem, while the defense hasn't been great, I think they've improved – The problem's the offense, and starts with Bortles. Can't run the football either, but got to see some better quarterback play from Blake.
I think you nailed it sort of on the head there. I'm looking at, you know, just your year-by-year stats at this particular point. You know, the yards allowed by your defense is 338. Your total yards on offense is only 0.2 yards less than that. But when you look at the amount of yards passing and the amount of yards rushing, you can't run the ball. You're averaging only 76.7 yards a game.
Yep. And you know, we got Chris Ivory, who, well, I personally have loved like his entire career. I thought he's a cool player just to watch, but he doesn't look right. TJ Yeldon, I've been afraid this whole time, just isn't very good. And I feel like that's still true. And I hope that changes because, you know, this is my team. I want them to be good. And I'm used to good running backs with Fred Taylor, Maurice Jones-Drew, and T.J. Yeldon does not look like one of those guys. And so, can't run the ball. That doesn't help Blake. And then Blake just doesn't look right. A lot of people say mechanics. I don't know that stuff. I just know he's not getting the ball in the right places and turning the ball over too many times. So turnover is still an issue. I said in the write-up, you know, for the Raiders game, I feel like this will be copy paste for the rest of the season. If Bortles throws zero interceptions, the Jaguars have a chance to win. He threw a pick early last week, and sure enough, we lost.
Right now, he's at 9 touchdowns, 9 interceptions.
I do want to sort of through 6 games, I think. Yeah,
I do want to sort of look at your defense, though, because you are allowing almost 110 yards per game rushing. I mean, your defense was supposed to be much improved, and right now it looks just kind of mediocre.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think they show flashes and have good plays. That number actually surprised me. I didn't see that with the rushing yards, but maybe they were even more stout against the run last year, but we couldn't defend the pass whatsoever. So this year, I feel like we can defend the pass a little bit better, but maybe overall things are just kind of evening out, and mediocre sounds about right. You see some really great plays from Jalen Ramsey and actually a guy named Yannick Ngakoue, who has made some sacks and plays this year as a rookie. But yeah, overall, unit's still not that great. And it's really disappointing because it's year 4 for the Seattle's Gus Bradley, because I always feel like he's linked to Seattle, and Seattle has a great defense, but that defense didn't come with him to Jacksonville. So disappointing that he hasn't been able to put together, you know, maybe one dominant unit on one side of the ball or something. It's all very disappointing, Pod. You know, I wish we could be the Patriots and win with Jimmy Garoppolo and Jacoby Brissett. You know, but this goes in Duval County by way of me in Las Vegas.
Is Bradley starting to feel the fire? Is that something that you feel is sort of necessary to move the team forward, or you think the team needs to stick with Bradley a little bit longer?
You know, it's crazy. As you say, the fire, like Bradley would fear for his job, but the only fire anybody feels is like the fire from Gus Bradley's speeches. And everybody, no one ever says anything bad about Gus, and they all love to play for him. And free agents have come over and saying, wow, we love the energy that Gus Bradley brings. And I think that's a real thing, but I mean, come on, sooner or later, it's got to turn into wins, because he has some kind of motivational voodoo over everybody, which is a great thing. Like, that's a nice thing to have on a team, the players want to play for, but maybe he's just not a head guy, because the wins are not coming. And by now, at this year, they should. So it's definitely a crossroads. I don't think I really don't believe he'll get fired midseason. But if things continue this way, I'm fine getting a new coach. I think it's probably warranted. I kind of feel bad for the owner, Shad Khan, even though he's got billions of dollars, just because he put a lot of faith into these guys and listened to smart football people saying stick with one plan, and he has, and it just has not worked.
So both teams now, as you're facing the Titans this week, coming to this game 2-1 in their last 3, both losing last week. You guys beat Chicago in Chicago, which I guess for you guys is sort of a feat, but you really snaked one out there with a 1-point win. And then you did finally beat Indianapolis, you know, a team that's usually on top of this division. The Titans went to Miami, trounced them, and then barely got past Cleveland, and then lost to Indianapolis. I can't place either of these two teams, honestly. So what do you expect to see Thursday night?
No. And, what I expect to see is a game that I'm interested in, because nothing sticks in my craw more than the Tennessee Titans. I can't stand them. Obviously, we want a super fan, but I don't want to listen to anybody who's a fan of that team. But I'm a company man. Let's get a Titans fan here so we can battle. The both teams have not played so well, and the Jags specifically. That win against the Bears, they had no business winning. So I'm glad they did, obviously. then again, we had games against the Ravens and the Packers where we could have won if we made one play at the end, and it just didn't happen. Right now, I think from the outside, and probably for me, you'd have to say Tennessee's playing a little better. But these Thursday night games, even though it's a road game, I feel like the Jags have a chance just because the Titans have not, you know, lived up to maybe their expectations, although I never believed they would be that great. The whole AFC South is not that great. So I feel like the Titans are going to run the ball just like that's exactly what they want to do. And apparently, you know, we're giving up a lot of yards rushing, so that might not be a recipe for success. But I really feel like it's got to come down to Mariota or Bortles having a better game. And, you know, Bortles is prone to turnovers. And against a team that wants to run the ball and maybe slow things down, I really think, yet again, if Bortles does not throw an interception, that the Jaguars should win. But that is a risky proposition, to say the least.
If you're breaking it down to Bortles versus Mariota, I think I got to lean towards Mariota. Right now he's having a better season. He is a little hot. He's got the hot hand going for him. The ESPN.com matchup predictor greatly favors Tennessee. And honestly, when it comes to the Thursday night games, historically, the home team on the short week is coming out on top. So I'm surprised you say that. Two more quick questions here for you, Ryan. First, yep. What team in this division is going to come out on top? This is a question that was posed by Neil last week after our preview show. We ended up spending a good amount of time about it after the podcast was over. But I want to hear from a person in this division, which team is coming away with the AFC South?
So in the offseason, especially the early offseason when the Jags made some of their transactions, somebody asked me the question, you know, does this get them over the hump? And even then, I said no. So now, with all the evidence that we've seen, unfortunately, I don't think I can say the Jags are going to turn it around. They certainly haven't shown that they can turn it around. You know, if they do, would it be the most surprising thing we've seen in the NFL? No. But I don't think we could say them. I'm not a believer in Tennessee. So I think it comes down to the Colts and the Texans. And so it comes down to a team that's pretty good as far as the Texans go with awful quarterback play, or a team that's pretty bad with great quarterback play in the Colts with Andrew Luck. So at this very moment, and this goes off of the recency bias of the Monday night game that we saw.
Yeah,
I can't pick Indy. I take it back. I'll go with the Texans. Somehow they get it done at like 8-8 and get this division wrapped up. I think it's going to come down to the Colts and Texans, though, honestly. And right now I'm just going to go with the defending champs and say Houston.
Hmm. All right. And I lied. There's two more questions for you.
Fine.
Now there's two more questions. with all of this movement going on right now in the NFL, we have the Los Angeles Rams of Anaheim. It appears the Oakland Raiders of Las Vegas are going to become a thing. I haven't heard a lot of rumbling of Jacksonville moving, and they were like the prime candidate to be of movement, a team that was going to be on the move. Is that true? Have those rumblings died down, especially as we enter the last game over in England this week? I mean, is there still perhaps a chance Jacksonville is going to find a new place to play?
Those rumblings are dead. Those are dead. All those rumblings are gone. Just like the false narrative about the seats and not filling the seats in Jacksonville when plenty of teams have been worse the last couple of years. So I got to defend my boys here. There's been teams that have had more problems as far as the seats go, and the rumblings about moving have died down because, again, the owner, Shad Khan, has like put a ton of money and resources into building new parts in the stadium and has other plans for the city and things around Everbank Field, to where, yeah, it just doesn't nationally, like you said, you're not hearing anything about the team moving, and I can't say locally, but you know, all the Jaguars news that I read, that's pretty much dead. It doesn't really seem like they're going anywhere. And I think it's justified with all the work that's being put into the team. It's obviously not being justified with wins and losses, fortunately. But they seem safe is kind of a scary word to use, but as far as I can see, Jacksonville does seem fairly safe to stay in that city.
And the last question, the puke yellow, I don't even know what color it is that they have in these color rush games. You thumbs up or thumbs down?
Can I put it thumbs middle?
No.
Thumbs middle?
Oh,
thumbs
my God. Middle? How can you even be middle on those? Those things are disgusting.
Well, here's why I give them a thumbs up. How about that? Thumbs up. Here's why. Because some of the supposed color rush uniforms have been white. What's up with that? That's not much of a rush.
Agree.
Ooh, white.
I agree with that.
Okay, so we're trying. I wish they would go back to the teal alternate uniforms that they had at least at some point in the season. Those seem gone, but we'll give the ugly mustard yellow gold whatever's a thumbs up.
I just want to put this out there to NFL marketing. We as fans wanted to see, you know, color jersey versus color jersey. We didn't want to see them wearing the exact same color all over their bodies. That's just stupid. All right.
Yeah.
How about the helmets that you've had? Now you've had them for a couple years now, but I'm also thumbs down on the stupid black fade into gold helmet. You should just have a gold chrome helmet. That would look awesome.
You know what? Those have been debated, especially the first couple of years they were out. A lot of heat on both sides. I'm fine with not liking them. I think, again, had they turned into like a Seattle, all of a sudden with, 13, 14 wins, those helmets would look pretty good. But since they've been associated with losing, yeah, we can get rid of the two-tone. Fine with me. Go black or go gold. Either one would be fine with me. When their time is up to be able to change uniforms, maybe they'll switch back. At least they tried.
What's your prediction for the game? So we give people actually, you know, a true preview of this Thursday night debacle.
Well, regardless of what is maybe going to happen because of the home field advantage, as you said, for Thursday night games, I will never pick the Titans over the Jaguars because that just would make my blood boil. So we'll go, let's make it a wacky score. We're going to go Jaguars 19, Tennessee 15.
I think you might have the score right, but I think you have the teams flip-flopped. All right.
Teams wrong? Okay.
Ryan, thanks. Thanks for giving us the super fan battle and previewing the Thursday night game. And we need more of you on this podcast. So those Jaguars got to get better.
Yes, I agree. I agree. Thanks, Todd.
All right, so thanks to Ryan. Thanks to Arthur Arkish. Hey, we want to hear from you. NextFanUp@gmail.com. You can also tweet us at NFU Podcast. And of course, if you subscribe to our show on iTunes, that's the best way so you don't miss any of our programs. We are now 5 days a week, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. And you can leave us a review. We want to hear from you. Leave us a review. We'll read it on the show, and we'll have a lot of fun with it. So go to iTunes, subscribe to the show so you don't miss any of them. Leave us a review, which only helps our show in the long run, which is what we want from you. Don't forget about BetDSI.com. And now check out our new website, NextFanUp.wordpress.com. We've got a whole bunch of great things going on there. Neil, our Redskins superfan, also wrote up a nice little article about the upcoming trade deadline. You're going to want to check that out. NextFanUp.wordpress.com. And for everyone else, I will talk to you again tomorrow with our week 8. Oh my gosh, it's already week 8. Our week 8 NFL preview show. In the meantime, there you have it.
Well, I think we learned today that, this game is 4 quarters long.